Something changed in her. Her face could not show it, but he heard the crooning sound of her pleasure, and he felt the change in her motion. She moved, and they came together, and the slam that rolled across them then seemed entirely subjective. She lay beside him all that night. Occasionally they woke and made love and went back to sleep. If Prill felt disappointment at these times, she did not show it, or Louis did not see it. He knew only that she was no longer playing him like an instrument. They were playing a duet. Something had happened to Prill. He suspected what it was. The morning dawned gray and stormy. Wind howled around the ancient building. Rain lashed the bay window of the bridge and stormed through broken windows higher up. The improbable was very close to the eye storm. Louis dressed and left the bridge. He saw Nessus in the hallway. "You!" he shouted. The puppeteer shied.
"Yes, Louis?"
"What did you do to Prill last night?"
"Show proper gratitude, Louis. She was trying to control you, to condition you into subservience, I heard."
"You used the TASP on her."
"I gave her 3 seconds at half power while you were engaged in reproductive activity. Now it is she who is conditioned."
"You monster, you egotistical monster!"
"Come no closer, Louis."
"Prill is a human woman with free will."
"What of your own free will?"
"It was in no danger. She can't control me."
"Is there something else bothering you?" "Louis, you are not the first human couple I have watched in reproductive activity. We felt that we must know all about your species. Come no closer, Louis."
"You hadn't the right."
Certainly Louis never intended to harm the puppeteer. He clenched his fists in rage, but he did not intend to use them. In rage, he stepped forward. Then Louis was in ecstasy. In the heart of the purest joy he had ever known, Louis knew that Nessus was using the TASP on him. Without allowing himself to realize the consequences, Louis kicked out and up. He used all the strength he could divert from his enjoyment of the TASP. It was not great, but he used it, and he kicked the puppeteer in the larynx beneath the left jaw. The consequences were hideous. Nessus said, "Gloop," and stumbled back and turned off the TASP. The weight of all the sorrow that men are heir to came down on the shoulders of Louis Wu. Louis turned his back on the puppeteer and walked away. He wanted to weep, but more than that, he wanted the puppeteer not to see his face. He wandered randomly, seeing only his own inner blackness. It was only coincidence that brought him to the stairwell. He had known full well what he was doing to Prill. Balanced over a drop of 90 feet, he had been eager enough to see Nessus use the TASP on Prill. He had seen wireheads. He knew what it did to them. Conditioned, like an experimental pet. And she knew. Last night had been her last valiant attempt to break loose from the power of the TASP. Now Louis had felt what she was fighting. "I shouldn't have done it," said Louis Wu. "I take it back." Even in black despair, that was funny. You can't take back such a choice. It was coincidence that he went down the stairwell instead of up. Or his hind brain may have remembered a slam that his forebrain had hardly noticed. The wind roared around him, hurling rain from every direction as he reached the platform. It took some of his attention outside himself. He was losing the grief that came with the loss of the TASP. Once Louis Wu had sworn to live forever. Now, much later, he knew that obligations went with such a decision. "Got to cure her," he said. "How?" "No physical withdrawal symptoms, but that won't help her if she decides to walk out of a broken window. How do I cure myself?" For some minor part of him still cried for the TASP and would never stop. The addiction was nothing more than a below-threshold memory. Strand her somewhere with her supply of youth drug, and the memory would fade. "Tanj, we need her." She knew too much about the engine room of the improbable. She couldn't be spared. He'd just have to get Nessus to stop using the TASP. Watch her for a while. She'd be awfully depressed at first. Abruptly, Louis's mind registered what his eyes had been seeing for some time. The car was 20 feet below the observation platform. A cleanly designed maroon Dart with narrow slits for windows
It hovered without power in the roaring wind, caught in an electromagnetic trap nobody had remembered to turn off. Louis looked once, hard to be sure that there was a face behind the windscreen. Then he ran upstairs, shouting for Prill. He didn't know the words, but he took her by the elbow and pulled her downstairs and showed her. She nodded and went back up to use the police trap adjustments. The maroon dart moved tight up against the edge of the platform. The first occupant crawled out, using both hands to hang on, for the wind was howling like a fiend. It was Teela Brown. Louis felt little surprise. And the second occupant was so blatantly typecast that he burst out laughing. Teela looked surprised and hurt. They were passing the ice storm. The wind roared up through the stairwell that led to the observation platform. It whistled through the corridors of the first floor and howled through broken windows higher up. The halls ran with rain. Teela and her escort and the crew of the Improbable sat about Louis's bedroom, the bridge. Teela's brawny escort talked gravely with Prill in one corner, though Prill kept a wary eye on speaker to animals and another on the bay window. But the others surrounded Teela as she told her tale. The police device had blown most of the machinery in Teela's fly cycle. The locator, the intercom, the sonic fold, and the kitchen all burned out at once. Teela was still alive because the sonic fold had had a built-in standing wave characteristic. She had felt the sudden wind and had hit the retro field immediately before the Mach 2 wind could tear her head off. In seconds, she had dropped below the municipal upper speed limit. The trap field had been about to blow her drive. It refrained. The wind was tolerable by the time it broke through the stabilizing effect of the sonic fold. But Teela was nothing like stable. She had brushed death too closely in the eye storm. This second attack had followed too quickly. She guided the fly cycle down, searching in the dark for a place to land. There was a tiled mall surrounded by shops. It had lights, oval doors that glowed bright orange. The cycle landed hard, but by then she didn't care. She was down. She was dismounting when the vehicle rose again. The motion threw her head over heels. She rose to her hands and knees, shaking her head. When she looked up, the fly cycle was a dwindling dumbbell shape. Teela began to cry. "You must have broken a parking law," said Louis. "I didn't care why it happened. I felt..." She didn't have the words, but she tried anyway. "I wanted to tell someone I was lost, but there wasn't anyone. So I sat down on one of the stone benches and cried. I cried for hours. I was afraid to move away because I knew you'd be coming for me. Then he came." Teela nodded at her escort. "He was surprised to find me there. He asked me something. I couldn't understand. But he tried to comfort me. I was glad he was there, even if he couldn't do anything." Louis nodded. Teela would trust anybody. She would inevitably seek help or comfort from the first stranger to come along. And she would be perfectly safe in doing so. Her escort was unusual. He was a hero, you could tell. You didn't need to see him fighting dragons. You need only see the muscles, the height, the black metal sword. The strong features, uncannily like the wire sculpture face in the castle called Heaven. The courteous way he talked to Prill, apparently without realizing that she was of the opposite sex, because she was another man's woman. He was clean-shaven. No, that was improbable. More likely he was half-engineer. His hair was long and ash-blonde and not too clean, and the hairline shaped a noble brow. Around his waist was a kind of kirtle, the skin of some animal. "He fed me," Teela said. "He took care of me. Four men tried to jump us yesterday, and he fought them off with just his sword. And he's learned a lot of Interworld in just a couple of days."
"Has he?"
"He's had a lot of practice with languages."
This was the most unkindest cut of all.
"What?"
"Never mind. Go on."
"He's old, Louis. He got a massive dose of something like booster spice long ago. He says he took it from an evil magician. He's so old that his grandparents remembered the fall of the cities." "Do you know what he's doing?" Her smile became impish. "He's on a kind of quest. Long ago, he took an oath that he would walk to the base of the arch. He's doing that. He's been doing it for hundreds of years."
"The base of the arch?" Teela nodded.
She was smiling very prettily, and she obviously appreciated the joke, but in her eyes there was something more.